My video. Okay. I'm on a tablet, so I'll do my best though. Can you hear me, Katie?
Yeah, can hear you just fine. Thank you. And we can see you as well. So I think anytime you are ready, Mr. Chair, we can start the meeting.
Okay. Let's pull up the agenda on this other document. Let's see how I can. Just one thing, Katie, since I'm on a tablet, I can only see you. I don't know if I'll be able to fix that. So if you can let me know if Mr. Jonathan, or just interrupt if when you want to speak, because that's
okay.
Probably
what
we'll be able to do at the moment, given I don't have access to a computer. So but we're ready to start.
Okay. Yeah. And Vice Chair Jonathan is here and ready to go as well. So when any time we can get started. Thanks.
Okay. So I'll call the Desert Community Energy meeting of June 29th. Oh, wrong one. Sorry about that. Pulled up the wrong document. One second. Okay. So we'll call the Desert Community Energy meeting of July 18th, 2022 to order. Roll call, please.
City of Palm Springs?
Here.
City of Palm Desert?
Present.
We have a quorum, Chair. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Do we have any changes to the agenda?
No changes.
Okay. So we'll accept the agenda and move on to public comments. This is the time for members of the community and public to address the committee on agenda items. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. If you would like to make public comment, please either hit the raise hand button or Zoom or hit *9 on your phone. Do we have any public comments?
We did not receive any written public comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
Okay. We'll move to the next item, which is board member director comments. Vice Chair Jonathan or Ms. Barros, any comments? I don't have any.
I do have a brief comment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, please.
At our last meeting, the Palm Desert City Council was considering and approving its comprehensive environmental policy moving forward. And I requested that staff include, again, an evaluation of the city opting in all of its municipal accounts to Desert Community Energy, the all green option. And it was accepted that that the city would reconsider. So I wanted to apprise staff especially that you did a great job. I think it was you, Katie, in analyzing what the cost would be and what the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions would be. And I think that will be ultimately what will be evaluated. So I wanted to give you a heads up that that same exercise may be coming your way with hopefully a much more successful outcome. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. And thank you. And thank you for your continued work on that. We look forward to Palm Desert joining us in this 100% carbon-free option, at least for your municipal accounts to start. So appreciate your work.
Yeah. And I have to say, Councilmember Kors, that Palm Springs has led by example and hopefully has made my effort a little bit easier because now we have something tangible that we can point our fingers to. It's really hard to dismiss if somebody truly cares about the environment. So thank you for your leadership as well.
Thank you. Do you have any staff comments?
Mr. Chair, I do have a couple updates for you I'd like to present for the board. One of those I wanted to just reflect that previously the board had requested comparative financial statements to show year-over-year activity and position. DCE staff has worked hard to transition our accounting structures and is pleased to produce the first year-over-year comparative financials in today's agenda packet. The process allowed for efficiencies in monthly reporting, and the new year year-over-year financials replace the formerly provided summary statements. And I just want to give a shout out to Claude and Janice and the accounting team in response, of course, to Vice Chair Jonathan's request some time ago. So that's an announcement. Also, I wanted to let you know, after the board approved at the last meeting, the first amendment to the credit agreement with River City Bank, it has now been finalized. That was actually approved and finally closed just last week. The amendment increases the total available to not to exceed $13 million, including working capital advances of up to $8 million. And this amendment provides flexibility for DCE related to the CPUC financial security requirement that was discussed last month. The staff really appreciates and DCE appreciates the support from the City of Palm Springs in approving the amendment to the guarantee as part of this credit agreement amendment. So that's another update. I also wanted to give you a heads up that at this time staff is evaluating whether our regularly scheduled August meeting, currently scheduled for Monday, August 22nd at 3 p.m., will be necessary. We're continuing to work with the Energy Authority to meet our midterm reliability procurement requirements for zero emitting resources, which are designed to achieve the state's ambitious greenhouse gas emissions reduction targets for 2030 and beyond. These agreements are still being negotiated, and there may be agreements ready for in time for the board in August. However, at this point, it's kind of looking like that might not be necessary. So we want to just let you know about that at this stage. We'll be keeping you informed about the need for an August meeting, and if the meeting is not needed, we will be sending a cancellation notice out well in advance of August 22nd. We'll certainly let you know before that happens. And finally, I just want also to note at the last meeting, Chair Kors, you requested and had some comments about the cost allocation between Palm Springs and DCE as presented in the approved 2022-23 budget. Staff is reviewing the discussions on this matter in the past and having some internal conversations. We do anticipate bringing something back for the board's further discussion at a future meeting, probably September. And also just to remind everybody, in the hot summer months, we want to continue to conserve and reduce our electricity use, especially during those peak hours, 4 to 9 p.m. With that, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Vice Chair Jonathan.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have a quick question. Katie, you mentioned August 22nd. My placeholder for August is the 15th. Do I have that wrong?
No,
I probably do.
I will have to check that, Vice Chair Jonathan. Let me just check real quick. I may have it incorrect as well. And actually, you are right. I apologize. It should be. It's the third Monday, and August 1st is Monday. So I apologize for that. It would be the 15th. So okay. We'll make that correction, and we'll certainly keep you posted as to whether that meeting will be needed.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just one follow-up, if I can. So on the reminding people of the 4 to 9 p.m. Minimize use of appliances, things along those lines. Is there another push to try and get that out to the public? I know as ensconced as I am in all this, I will say that this year I really took it to heart, and especially with some changes at Edison on ours, and it has actually made a difference. We have solar, but not 100%. And just not using major appliances from 4 to 9, we've already seen an impact personally. So just the more we can push that out, right, to all, and not just to our two DCE cities, but maybe CVAG pushes that out as well throughout the valley. We're having obviously some record heat, and the more we can save people money right now, given costs of electricity, the better. So just wanted to highlight that.
Good suggestion. We will, social media is pushing out that message, and we have a flyer that we were going to be distributing, but we'll certainly also encourage that CVAG promote that message as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So with that, we'll move on to the consent calendar. This will be approved in one motion unless there's a request to pull an item. Any request to pull an item off the consent calendar?
Hearing none, I'll move approval.
I will second. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes, the motion carries. We'll move now to item 7. And I presume staff will be taking the lead. And this is an update on statewide legislation impacting CCAs. And I think Sean McNeil will be joining us. I see David Friedman is joining us. I'll turn it over to Mr. Friedman. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair Kors, and good morning to you and Vice Chair Jonathan. We're, as you know, DCE is an active member of CalCCA, our California Community Choice Association, and we participate actively very much in the committee meetings. And among those committee meetings, every Friday morning, it's an appointment with Sean and the team and the other CCAs. We get a detailed legislative update on bills pending for the legislature and also strategies to make sure that the interests of the CCAs are defended in the legislature, as well as with the administration, in particular in the budget. So we're now at a legislative break. The legislature is in summer recess. They ended with the passage of the budget at the very end of June, with some good news that Sean will be sharing on the California arrearages payment program, with some additional money for our customers, and also a number of pieces of legislation. So I'd like to very much thank Sean for making time from his busy schedule to join us here with the presentation to the board on both the budget matters as well as pending legislation from our session. So thank you very much, Sean. Over to you.
All right, thank you. Let me just make sure everything is coming in okay and that you can see and hear me, everything good. All right, I'll assume that's okay. And I'll just apologize in advance. It's a work from home day today, so I have a few little kids and a puppy in the background, so you may get some background noise, but hopefully not. Thanks for having me here today. If you've seen the packet in advance, it may seem like a lot of slides, but I think we can go through these relatively quickly and at a pretty high level. With that said, please don't hesitate to ask any questions along the way. So first, I don't know if you can maybe hit the next. There we go. So first, I will very quickly cover the timeline and the rollout for the CAP program for 2022 and 2023 budget year. Second, I will give you sort of a quick update on the continued budget discussions. The budget's passed, but not all of the budget work is done. And then next, we'll cover the bills, starting with the bills that we have finished for the year. The second set of bills, we'll talk about bills that had some that we had some concerns, but we resolved those issues, and hopefully they stay on track for the rest of the way. And then the third set of bills, these are sort of ongoing, not necessarily all problematic, but ongoing and things that we need to monitor as they go through the process for the last month of the legislature. And before I get started, I think everybody knows that the legislature is on recess. You're probably seeing your legislators in town at local meetings, and they will be out until August 1st. They return to Sacramento for a four-week crash course and finalizing everything by August 31st. Okay, so I won't talk too much about the CAP program. I think everyone is somewhat familiar with it from last year, but here are the key provisions in the CAP program for 2022 and 2023. The first thing is that there was almost $1 billion just for the IOUs and CCA customers. That's an increase from what was passed in the previous budget year. As you can see on the right, that's the breakdown for the customers in each of the IOU service territories. The funds cover the arrearages period up until December 31st of 2021. If you recall, last year's budget covered from March of 2020 to June 30th of 2021. It did not cover from July 1 of last year up until the end of the calendar year. So it covers that additional 6 months. It also extends the disconnection moratorium. And that will continue to go until payments are credited to the customer bills, which has to be done by July 2nd of 2023. There will be 9 months to fund the applications. So it starts on, I think, July 2nd of this year, and the whole process needs to be completed by April. And then, most importantly, in many ways, is the pro rata allocation was preserved. This was something that CalCCA did not initially have when the proposal was released last year. And we worked with the administration and both the Senate and Assembly leadership to get this language in it. And it basically means that if the IOUs get paid, we get paid. Or if our customers get credited, their customers get credited, our customers get credited. Everyone gets, all the customers are protected equitably. And this was a huge win for us last year. And in this budget trailer bill, that language was already put in from the start. So, and we were able to preserve it. So that was a big win. Next slide, please. And then this is just a slide that details the calendar of everything that I just described. And so the applications are available now, and they will be available until September 29th. Then there will be a month when you can submit them. So you get the application now, then you have a 30 days to actually submit the details of that application. And then by February, this is the date by which the department, CSD is the Department of Community Services and Development. They're the one who, they're the department that implements the program. And they will have to distribute the funds to the IOUs by that date. And then the April date is when the IOUs must then credit the bills. And then there's 90 days after that to resolve that. And then once you hit July 2nd, that's when the customer disconnection moratorium is finally lifted. And that will be the end of the CAP program, barring any additional funds, you know, potentially appropriated next year. But this is a year-to-year, you know, implementation. It's not a continuous appropriation. So there's no guarantee there's going to be money in the pot next year. And I'll just pause there to see if anybody has any questions.
Anyone have any questions? Okay, let's continue. Thank you.
Great. Hopefully that means I'm covering it, or maybe not, I'm confusing everybody and nobody has any questions. Okay. So as I mentioned, there's still work being done on the state budget. Now this applies to not just energy issues that we're focused on, but a lot of areas in the budget. And this is not uncommon. Every year the legislature gets the sort of the base of the budget approved, so all the existing programs get funded. But sometimes there's tweaks to programs, and they need more time to work on sort of the implementation language. So as you know, the energy bill passed, main energy trailer bill passed on June 29th. However, you've probably heard that a lot of legislators were unhappy with many of the provisions in that, even though they ultimately voted for it because they wanted to get the ball rolling on some of these things. But there was a lot of concerns on some of the expedited CEQA and changing of who had authority over siting issues. You probably heard from the League of Cities and the California State Association of Counties, as well as a few other local government groups that were opposed to the bill because of those issues in the bill. And then there was a lot of concern about the priority on fossil resources in the bill and the lack of incentives for more clean reliability proposals. So, you know, with that said, there's also some unresolved issues, meaning that there were things that were funded that didn't have implementation language yet developed. And so with all that sort of, you know, kind of standing out there right now, we know that there's going to be another, at least one other, one additional energy trailer bill, and we expect that to be introduced in August. However, we don't really know what the scope is. Is the scope going to address, clarifications or fixes to the first energy trailer bill, or is it only going to focus on those issues that have not yet been addressed? So that's kind of what we're sort of waiting on. We're, communicating with the governor's office and legislators to find out, kind of what that scope is going to be. And if the scope is going to include issues, maybe cleanup issues or fixes, clarifications, to what was passed, in June, we are working on some potential fixes, to those. It wouldn't be anything too dramatic, but there are things like, programs that were designed in the bill that don't identify who's eligible to receive the funds. There were, some programs where they meant to include us, but the language seems to have an error where it says, yes, we are, and then we're not, and then we are. So that's something that we pointed out probably needs to be fixed. And, we're also just wanting to get more clarification on how they're going to what's going to trigger some of these emergency provisions that allow the use of these fossil resources. And so some of that stuff is unclear. And those are the kind of issues that we're communicating right now and trying to get a better understanding from legislative leaders, budget staff, and the governor's office. So I'll pause there real quick to see if anybody has any questions on the budget timeline or content.
Anyone have any questions on the budget? Other than I'd like to see changes in it.
But thank you for
that was very thorough and appreciated.
Yeah.
I guess one quick question is just, what are the kind of things we can do, or do you want to do that at the end sort of to help?
No, we can address that right now since we're on budget issues. I think first off, we just need to figure out what's going to be on the table. If legislative leadership or the governor's office doesn't see a need to, clean up or fix what was in AB 205, then there's really not a whole lot we can do there. But if the door is open, if they acknowledge that, some things need to be fixed or cleaned up, we will present sort of our ideas. And I think once, that process gets going, we will then circle back with obviously all of our members to get people to weigh in support of that. So right now it's kind of wait and see, unfortunately. And because it's recess, you either have legislators out of town or key staff members out of town, and not everybody's there at the same time. And so, the decisions aren't being made yet. Even though the work is being done, there's not coordination amongst, all the powers that be. And so we probably won't have any answers on any of this until we return on August 1st.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anyone else have any questions or comments? Okay.
Okay, so we will move into finished business. So before you are two bills that I can actually say that, conceptually we supported. However, there were a lot of mechanics in these two bills that caused us to take an oppose unless amended position. The first bill by Senator Dave Min from Irvine would have created some enforcement of our IRP plans if we didn't reach certain GHG goals. And if we didn't reach those goals, it could have potentially meant either significant penalties for CCAs or the ability of the PUC to order procurement, whether by us or by somebody else that we would have to pay for. So two things that we fundamentally just oppose. But we did like the idea of holding all LLCs accountable to make sure they're meeting their state GHG goals. But mechanically in this bill, there were no actual interim targets that they wanted us to procure to. And that gave us a lot of heartburn, because if you have targets that are constantly moving, and as all of you know, procurement projects take quite a while to put together, And if the target moves and you're not procuring to that target anymore, you would be seen as out of compliance. And so what we had suggested was to set firm targets per year that we would meet. And if we didn't meet it, then we would be subject to penalties. And we were fine with that. What we were not fine with was the PUC ordering procurement on our behalf. But we worked with the stakeholders for multiple months on this and just couldn't come to an agreement. That said, the bill ultimately failed passage of the Senate Appropriations Committee committee by the required deadline. And so that bill is no longer moving forward in 2022. And because we're at the end of a 2-year session, if the author were to address this issue next year, it would have to be introduced in a new bill. The second bill is SB 1287 by Senator Bradford. And this bill sought to increase the financial security requirements for CCAs. And again, we agree that the FSR needed to be updated. But this bill also included some additional calculations that were really undefined and really meant that financial requirements for CCAs could have been in the tens of millions of dollars. So for that reason, we opposed it. We wanted more, something to be more realistic, but also just not so undefined. And so we pushed some amendments to fix that language and to also update the bonding requirement from $149,000 to $500,000, but have it on a sliding scale, which we thought was reasonable because not all CCAs are the same size and are not going to have the same costs. Again, that bill, I think from our opposition, but also because the PUC was already working with all the stakeholders in the regulatory arena, the bill was not set for a hearing, and that bill also failed to pass by the deadline. So those were two bills we dealt with early in the year back in April, and were able to kind of get those off the plate. And so I'll pause there, see if there's any questions on those two bills, and if not, we can move on to the next slide.
Great. Any questions on either of these bills? I think we're good. Thank you. Okay, we can continue.
Okay, so these are five bills that we have been engaged with throughout the course of the year, and at least currently have resolved all of our issues. And so basically what we'll be doing is just kind of monitoring these bills for the, you know, as we hit that stretch run to make sure there are no changes that maybe move the bill backwards. excuse me. The first two bills are EV related. And the first one was by Assemblymember Ting, who's also the chair of budget. And what he was requiring in his bill was for there to be data collection on EV chargers. And the whole point of this was to see kind of, you know, what a charging station's uptime was. How much of the time was it working? Because they wanted to get a better sense of how reliable our EV chargers are, and it would only be limited to those stations that are receiving public dollars. We supported the concept of this bill again, but our biggest issue was not all chargers are the same, and so putting onus requirements on, let's say, an apartment manager or a property owner there may actually create a disincentive for them to go seek state fundings and install these chargers. And also they were treating all chargers the same, not to get too wonky, but level one charging stations often don't have this data available. Level one charging stations are very popular with multi-unit dwellings, and we didn't want to create a disincentive for, again, property owners to install these at multi-unit dwellings. So those were amendments that we were working on in 2016 to address those disincentive problems. And then in 2701, this one was also kind of aimed at the same idea, but they wanted to get more information on why stations weren't reliable. And, you know, the definition of reliable, you know, is depending on how you want to see it. I mean, and what I mean by that is sometimes you're in rural areas and you may have supply chain issues. You may have issues with getting maintenance workers out there. You may be dealing with PSPS events that may all those factors may appear to make your charging stations less reliable when they're not. They just sometimes take it, it takes longer for them to get parts to fix it. It may take longer for people to get out there to monitor or provide the necessary software updates. Or like I said, you may, be faced with PSPS events and, you know, your charging stations go down. So we wanted to make sure that when the CEC did these reliability numbers, they factored in all these other issues and just didn't treat them all the same. So that was an amendment we were able to get in that bill. And both with 2016 and 27, and I one correction, it should say 2703. I accidentally typed in 2701. But both of those bills, CalCCA now supports because we were able to get the amendments that we needed. Oops, sorry, I just lost the screen here. Sorry about that. And then AB 2838, this was a bill, again, we were okay with the IOU having the ability to terminate the green tariff program. But what the IOUs were attempting to do with this bill is spread the cost of the program termination to all ratepayers. And the problem with this is when this bill was, or when this program was first created back in, I want to say it was 2012, the costs of the program were supposed to be paid by those customers that are participating in the program. And that's pretty consistent with a lot of different programs that are offered at the PUC. And that was what this program was supposed to do. But the IOUs wanted to change that wanted to spread the cost to all customers. So essentially that would have meant that CCA customers would have had to pay for a program that they weren't participating in. And so we were able to get an amendment to eliminate that cost provision. So the IOU can still terminate their green tariff program. This is like a community solar program. They can still terminate the program if the program is not successful, but they can't spread the cost to CCA customers. They would have to absorb it with the customers that are participating in the program. The next bill is a bill by Senator Portantino, and this created some expedited CEQA review for certain pollution control projects, but it also scooped in energy efficiency projects. And CEQA expedited review can be very beneficial in some cases, but energy efficiency programs or projects don't need to go through CEQA to begin with. So this actually, even though it was implementing an expedited review, actually meant delaying energy efficiency projects. And so we were opposed to that. We're able to get an amendment to eliminate energy efficiency projects from the provisions of the bill. And so we'll no longer have a delay there. And a lot of our CCAs are actively involved in energy efficiency programs. And so we wanted to make sure that we were able to continue to roll these out quickly. And then the last bill was a bill by Senator Archuleta. This bill instituted a number of very problematic disincentives for the implementation of REACH codes and basically moved the jurisdiction from the local community to the Energy Commission. And over the course of a couple of months, we worked with the League of Cities and CSAC to get Senator Archuleta to amend the bill so that it becomes more advisory as opposed to a requirement for locals to have their REACH codes get approved by the CEC. So these are all bills that we've resolved issues that we had. Some of these bills, like I said, we support, like the first two I mentioned are bills that CalCCA supports. And we'll continue to monitor them for the rest of the session just to make sure, you know, they don't go in the wrong direction, like I said. But as of right now, these are resolved issues for us.
Great.
All right, the last three, these are bills that we are still engaging on. The first one is AB 2316 by Assemblymember Ward. And this one creates another community solar program, which we are supportive in concept again. However, what this bill does is requires not only the IOUs to provide these programs, but it requires the CCA to provide these programs. And as a CCA, you know, one of the things that we've always held dearly is not being told how to do things by the PUC. If we want to create our own program, we should be allowed to do that. We shouldn't be required to run a program that the PUC creates. And that's been pretty typical since you know, the bill allowing CCAs to exist passed in 2002. And so that's something that we are working with the author to remove. We want to make sure that CCAs are not required to offer these programs. We can participate in them if we choose to do that, but we shouldn't be required. And so that's an amendment we're seeking. We think we're pretty close to getting that. We've been having ongoing discussions with the author and the sponsor for a couple of months. There were a little bit of hangups as the bill was going through the assembly, because the Assembly Appropriations Committee kind of rewrote the bill. And so we actually had this amendment in the bill early on and it got written out. And so we're in the process of getting that back in. So we're hopeful in the next couple of weeks we'll have an agreement on that. Any amendments wouldn't go into print until August 1st when the legislators return. But we're confident we're going to be able to get there. The next bill, AB 2667. This is a bill that we're really just monitoring. There was some language inserted into the bill about a month ago that questioned whether or not if we offer transportation electrification programs, if we would be considered an electric utility and then subject to the oversight of the CPUC. And our legal analysis says we are not. However, as that language starts to change over the next month, we want to make sure it stays that way. So this is a bill we're just monitoring closely for now. We think it's heading in the right direction, but again, it's something we just need to pay close attention to, because the last thing we want is to accidentally grab CCAs and put us under the jurisdiction of the CPUC if we are offering transportation electrification programs. The intent was to really focus on microgrids. So, and then the last bill, SB 1020, this is a bill CalCCA supports, although we are looking to get some changes in there. But the first thing that it does is it creates some interim targets for the state for all LCs to reach their GHG reduction goals. And if you recall earlier in the discussion on SB 881, this is something we actually provided the author. We wanted certain defined targets, and that's what this bill is doing. So for that reason, we really like this bill. It's something that our CCAs can look out to and procure to, and we think that makes a lot of sense. The second part of this bill is that it creates a new fund that will collect money from either the general fund or federal dollars. But the whole point is for this fund to then help pay for a lot of the customer programs that might be currently on the bill that help address climate issues. So think about energy efficiency, transportation, and electrification. A lot of our customers are paying for this on the distribution side of the bill. And the goal of this fund is to remove those fees from the customer bill so that their bills are reduced. And that's sort of an affordability issue that the legislature has been focused on this year. I believe, you know, that's going to be something that they're going to be focused on for the next few years. And this is the start of that. And so we really support that as well. There are some small technical things that we've engaged with the author on, and we're hoping to to fix, but we support what they're trying to do here. We'll continue to monitor that one as well for the last month of session. And that's all I have for now, and open it up to any questions on any of the bills.
Great. Any questions, Vice Chair Jonathan?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have a brief question. I know we've taken a lot of time out of the agenda for this, so just a brief question. I'll ask for a brief response, if you would, please, Mr. McNeil. So, you know, with the mandates that are coming into place with regards to electric vehicles, electric appliances, we can expect a significant increase in demand for electrical energy. And as we know, supply is already in low, particularly during certain periods of the year and certain periods of the day. So we're exacerbating an existing problem. Nationwide and really internationally, we're seeing a renaissance of nuclear energy as an alternative to energy supply and clean energy supply. We're seeing micro plants. We're seeing recycling of nuclear waste. We're seeing the federal government under the Curl administration allocate billions towards nuclear energy development, which all brings me to my question. Can you give a brief oversight of what, if anything, is happening in that direction, other than delaying the closure of certain plants, in terms of exploring the feasibility and perhaps even creating nuclear energy again in California?
Yeah, I don't know that there's a whole lot of interest in creating new. Certainly there's a discussion on Diablo Valley right now. Nothing has really been said publicly by, you know, legislative leadership or the governor's office. Other than that, you know, they're kind of exploring it, right? I think only the governor's office has alluded to that. So, you know, that will be, I believe, a part of the discussion when we come back in August. Certainly it's an issue on the table. I don't know that the legislature is necessarily there yet. So, you know, so I don't know how to answer that for you right now, but it's certainly going to be part of the conversation when they come back on August 1st.
That is the answer. So appreciate it. Not necessarily the answer I want to hear, but it is the accurate one. Yeah. So thank you for that. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you. Staff, anything you want to add or say?
No, other than we continue to be actively engaged. And while DC isn't officially a voting member at CalCCA, thanks to Sean and the team at CalCCA, I'm regularly involved in sort of communicating our interests. So, for example, the REACH code bill, Chair, of course, you're aware that I am working on that as per your direction in Palm Springs City Council. So I specifically raised the comments that we had on that bill, and those were integrated. So there's a perfect example of DC actively participating and having our views welcomed and considered at the CalCCA Legislative Committee.
Great, thanks. And please always reach out to Vice Chair Jonathan and myself if it's helpful to make any calls, whether to legislative leadership or specific legislators, to be helpful. And with that, Mr. McNeil, thank you so much for your presentation and also all of your great work. It's appreciated.
Thank you.
Next, we will move on to an update on our financial outlook. And I think Jacqueline Haar is going to be joining us.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, welcome.
Yeah, glad to get going. Am I sharing? Oh, there we go. All right, so let's jump right into it on the DCE financial outlook. Next slide, please. So key takeaways is that, you know, forward energy prices have increased for 2022 and 2023. That's the same message I think I've been giving over the past few financial updates. The good news is 2022 is fully hedged. So as energy prices move, DCE's financial impact will be very slight. It's not possible to hedge every hour at 100%, at least not in a cost-effective way, but on average, DCE is fully hedged for 2022. And for 2023, we're now over three quarters hedged. The expected net revenue for 2022 is down from the last time I was in front of you. It is now at an expected net revenue of $4.5 million. The main impactor of that change in the forecast from when I gave the Q2 update is that Q2 revenues were lower than expected in our financial modeling. And the prime driver of that is that the Palm Springs area had much lower temperatures than I think is historically expected in Q2. And with lower temperatures, that meant lower AC loads and, you know, lower loads overall, which meant less revenues coming in. So, you know, I think a boon for the Palm Springs area overall. You know, we are glad that there's less, you know, heat hitting your area, but it does impact the expected revenues. So we'll see what comes for Q3. And then for 2023, our net revenue forecast is $16 million. And so that's up from last year, or from last quarter when I presented. And the primary change is an increased expectation of SCE rates going up more than we were previously forecasting. That driver is primarily due to the increase in energy prices. So SCE rates will be higher, and therefore DCE's rates, which are pegged against SCE rates, will also be somewhat higher. So this is just graphically showing the changes in the total revenue. So as you can see, total revenue overall for 2022 is down $5.5 million as discussed. And expected revenues for 2023 are $8.9 million. Next slide. Costs are also shifted slightly. So the costs for 2022 are down a little bit. You may be asking, you know, why if revenues are down, did our costs of procurement not also go down? And, you know, the issue there is just that we do forward procurement based on a forecast. It's from a risk perspective, it's much better to do that forward procurement rather than wait until actual loads come in and procure kind of day of. So because of that, you know, we procured to the expected Q2 forecast. Unfortunately, loads were lower than expected. So, you know, we had this decrease in revenue without a matching decrease in costs. For 2023, the forecast of total cost change is up. And that's primarily due to those increased market prices, as already discussed. Next slide. And then, you know, just graphically showing you where we see the SCE rates going for 2023 is in the second half, the right half of the slide. The 2022 SCE rates are already locked in. You can see those on the left hand. So you can see that the PCIA rate is expected to drop a little bit. That's a positive for DCE customers and DCE itself. This is due to the generation fleet that SCE procured, you know, decades ago on behalf of all customers, including DCE customers. Those resources are expected to generate more revenue in the markets with the increase in the costs, and so that will mean that less money needs to be collected from DCE customers. In fact, we're forecasting, if you can see, a slightly below zero PCIA for 2023. That indicates that these legacy resources are generating more in revenues than they have in costs, which is, you know, relatively unexpected given, you know, the technology types behind some of these legacy resources. So that's a positive. And then generation rates are expected to increase slightly for SCE compared to this year. And that's just to cover the expected costs for 2022 and 2023. Next slide. And this is a chart just showing the current energy prices and what we were showing last month. So orange is peak hours. Those are kind of your main part of the day, weekdays and Saturdays. And then purple is off-peak hours, so middle of the night, as well as Sunday and holidays. The dashed lines are what you saw back in March, and the solid lines are the current forwards. So as you can see, we have had a slight decrease in expected prices for August, Q3 of 2022. That's, you know, driven primarily due to the fact that some of the gas markets have settled a little bit. You know, the supply chain issues are getting a little bit more clear, and there's just less uncertainty in the market. That being said, the power prices expected into the winter of next year, as well as the summer of next year, are elevated. So that increase overall is what's driving those higher costs, and, you know, as well as the higher expected rates. And next slide, I think that was that. And so bringing it all together, just, you know, graphically showing the annual net revenue is, you know, the decrease for 2022, driven by the rates, or sorry, driven by the lowered loads than expected. We'll see how Q3 plays out and report back to you in early Q4. And then in 2023, a higher than expected, than previously expected net revenue forecast. And now I believe that is indeed my last slide. So glad to take any questions.
Great. Thank you so much. Vice Chair Jonathan?
No, I don't have questions. Thank you.
It deals with math. I always expect you to have something. we appreciate that. Yeah, it's all facts. And, you know, less usage is good on many levels. So, appreciate that, staff. Anyone else have any questions or comments? If not, thank you so much. And we'll look forward to seeing you early on in the next quarter, if not before. So our final sort of major item is the update on DCE's Distributed Energy Resource Program. And Mr. Friedman, you're back on. We can see the slide.
Mr. Chair, David's having a little bit of difficulty with his computer. He just has to restart, so it'll just be a minute. Thank you.
Okay. We saw the slide, but not him.
So. Yep. He should be back with us in just a second. A little bit of a glitch.
You know, while we're waiting, Mr. Chair, if I can just skip ahead to a quick comment I wanted to make on the informational items. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay.
In fact, why don't we just go to the informational items? We could probably do those now, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Sounds good.
Okay. So please go ahead.
Okay. Just on the financial reports, it was mentioned briefly earlier, but I wanted to thank Claude and his team. I find the comparative reports very, very informative, super helpful. So thank you for that. I did have some questions, but I think I want to defer those until we're 1 month away from the full fiscal year. So at our next meeting, I'm sure we'll get the full fiscal year report, and probably better to just postpone those questions. It was nothing urgent or concerning, just some questions that I'm sure Claude can answer. So again, just wanted to thank Claude and his team for the comparative, very useful, and I'll defer my questions until our next meeting. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you. Anything else you or staff has on the information items? Seeing none. Anything, Katie?
I'm sorry. I just said I have nothing. Go ahead.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. We'll just wait till Mr. Friedman is reconnected.
Okay, he should be coming on in just a... Great. I guess if there were any public comment on non-agenda items, Jennifer, we could go ahead and do that as well.
Absolutely, if that's okay with you, Chair. We have not received any written comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
Okay, that's fine.
David is coming.
Okay.
Well, if he would just bear with us for another couple seconds, yeah, he said he's coming back. Sorry for the delay.
See. Hello. My apologies, Board.
There you go. Okay, I was just about to start on your staff report, David. Go ahead.
My apologies, Board. My computer suddenly dropped just as I was connecting. Thank you, Chair Corza. My apologies. I'd like to update the board on the Distributed Energy Resources, or DER, program that staff has worked on with Tierra Verde Energy since you approved the contract with Tierra Verde at your February meeting for a potential DER pilot program. Next slide, please. As a reminder, DER is a small-scale unit of power generation that operates locally and is connected to a larger power grid at the distribution level, often behind a customer's retail power meter. And then rooftop solar, battery storage, microgrids, and energy efficiency and demand management are often collectively referred to as DERs. And some of the benefits of a DER program include additional renewable energy procurement for DCE and promoting local jobs. Next slide, please. So as you can see from the schematic of the program structure that Tierra Verde proposed in its response to the RFP that DCE launched last November, DCE would be in the middle of a contractual structure between a solar and battery storage system vendor who would install and operate the system on the customer site and receive payments from DCE and the customer, who would pay DCE for the electricity consumed. Now, while this structure would allow DCE to capture the value of the energy produced and stored and would likely lead to cost savings for the customer, there are some legal and financial risks involved, including pending changes to both the federal and state rules governing solar energy. Accordingly, staff is working very closely with DCE's legal and financial advisors at Best and Krieger and the Energy Authority to evaluate and mitigate these risks. And staff and BBK had a productive risk mitigation meeting with Tierra Verde this past Friday morning. Next slide, please. So as staff presented to the board in your February meeting, this is a pilot program with four phases. The first two are at no cost to DCE, and the next two are subject to fee payments from DCE, but only if the board agrees to implement the DER program. Now, phase one is the design, feasibility, and assessment, which is where we are now. Tierra Verde has designed the program on a high level and has identified target customers with initial assessments of customer savings, portfolio impacts to DCE, and pro forma cash flows. Staff's finding is that the program merits further work, and we would like to get the board's direction to move forward with phase two. Now, phase two is program development. Staff is already working with Tierra Verde to engage target customers, and we've had several positive meetings with those target customers. If you approve moving to phase two, then staff will work closely with Tierra Verde and DC's advisors to confirm customer interest, develop a contract with these customers and a power purchase agreement with the solar and storage system vendor, and carry out a robust financial analysis. And as an interim step, staff will come back to the board for further direction before launching the vendor RFP. Now, at the conclusion of the RFP, staff will then present the proposed agreements with the vendor and customers, along with the financial analysis proposed based on the pricing proposed by the vendor, and we would go to the board for your approval. Now, if the board approves the agreements and the financial package, we'd be in phase three, which is the implementation phase. Tierra Verde will oversee the solar and storage system installation of the customer sites, and this phase triggers Tierra Verde's development fee of 6% of the total project cost. And then phase four is administration and asset management once the solar and storage systems are operating, and Tierra Verde would provide energy system portfolio optimization and administrative assistance for an additional annual fee based on the solar production. So next slide, please. Staff recommendation is that you discuss and provide direction to staff on next steps of the Behind the Meter Distributed Energy Resources Program. And that concludes my presentation, and I am available for any questions you may have. And David Burdick of Tierra Verde is also available for your questions. And once again, my apologies, the computer failed just as I was about to speak.
That happens, so thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Vice Chair Jonathan.
Thank you, Chairman Kors. No worries, Mr. Friedman. That seems to happen to me whenever my mayor disagrees with my position on an issue. I seem to get cut out. What a coincidence. So I do have a question for you. You mentioned potential liability and that mitigations are being studied by staff and our legal counsel at BB&K. I'm concerned specifically, not just about potential liability to DCE, but also to the individual member cities. So would it be possible and would it cause any problems if we delayed moving even a discussion or decision rather about moving forward until we've had a chance to understand those potential liabilities?
Well, the specific liabilities, which is what we're working for, is particularly just making sure, and it's really not much different from other contracts, but essentially, and we had a good discussion on Friday about this, and we can prepare a memo for that, although we can talk about the timing. Essentially, this is just a question of making sure that obligations that DCE might incur with the vendor are fully matched and embedded, so that actually what we would be looking at is to make sure that the vendor is working directly and legally responsible directly for the project. So we're just trying to make sure that there's a full sort of back-to-back, and in particular making sure that any particular liabilities, financial, operational, are between the vendor and the customer. And so that was actually the meeting that we had on Friday. So we're happy to do that. And our objective, which is to continue, and this is what I reflected in the staff report, they're really moving forward. There's actually at least two more times that we would go to the board. We would like to get your approval to actually nail down the contracts that would allow us to actually come back to the board, hopefully at the September meeting before you launch the RFP. And at that point, we would be able to report to you saying, We've analyzed the liabilities. The RFP would include the power purchase agreement, but we wouldn't launch the RFP until we've actually confirmed that. So that would actually be the next phase of this work, to allow staff to work very closely with Terra Verde, with BBK, and with our financial advisors to do exactly that work, so that we then come back to you in, hopefully again in September, to say we've looked at the liabilities, we're now comfortable with launching the RFP, and we would not come back to you unless we have exactly done that work. So that's really the whole point of the next phase, probably over the summer, to come back to you in hopefully the September. There is a bit of a time sensitivity in this, because I mentioned the pending changes, the solar, the NEM3, you recall that came up at the February board meeting. The CPUC is likely to come up with a proposed decision in the next, probably sometime in the next month or so, and that could potentially set a time clock to get this project in before the rules change. And also the federal investment tax credit is set to decline from 26% to 22% at the end of this year. So we are trying to make sure that we move forward while doing exactly that work and analyzing the liability. So that would be the request to move forward, but to come back to the board, hopefully in September, before you get your approval, before we launch the RFP, saying we've done this work and we're comfortable.
Okay. Thank you. That's a comprehensive answer to my question. What I'm hearing you say is that by directing staff to move forward, DCE is not making a commitment, a financial commitment, or entering into a contract. We'll have plenty of opportunity to do that. What I would ask staff moving forward is, I have colleagues, as I think most of you know, that are sensitive to any potential liability for the city of Palm Desert in particular. And my practice in the past has been to present staff's conclusions to our legal counsel and seek direction. So I would just ask that we have that analysis and that conclusion available as early as possible, so that I can do just that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Understood.
Great. Anyone else have anything else? And I agree with you, Vice Chair Jonathan. I think having that analysis, so we can, to the extent we need our councils to weigh in, our staff and city attorneys, is always helpful. So
thank you.
But I think moving forward, makes sense, given where we are in the process.
Yeah, I concur, Mr. Chair. I don't know if formal action is necessary, but that I'm certainly in agreement with what you just said.
I think this was just a direction item. So yes. I think the direction is pretty clear. And thank you, Mr. Friedman, for your work on this. It's appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Okay. So we've done both our information items and our public comment on non-agenda items, but I think we could just double check that there's no one on who might have been away for a moment while we were in sort of a break. An almost break. If I can ask Ms. Nelson just to double check that there's no one who wants to make public comment on non-agenda items.
I do not see any hands raised, no.
Okay, well, thank you. Our next DCE meeting will be held on August 15th, 2022 at 3 p.m. via Zoom webinar, although that meeting may not be necessary, and we'll let the public know as soon as we make a decision. At this time, we will be adjourning into a closed session. So I think we will end this Zoom for us. We will leave it and then use the link for a closed session.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll see some of you back, and thank you, everyone else.
And we're waiting for Mr. Price to join us to provide the report out of closed session. And there's Mr. Price.
This is Glenn Price at Best Best and Krieger is legal counsel, and there is nothing to report out of the closed session. No reportable action was taken.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Price. We'll now adjourn the meeting with a meeting tentatively scheduled for the 15th of August at 3 p.m. via Zoom, and we will confirm, provide announcement whether that meeting is canceled or not. And thank you. This now concludes the meeting.